And welcome back to this podcast. This is Meat and Moonlight with Niklas and Kuhn. Kuhn, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing fairly good, other than the sort of COVID thing is sort of getting to me with not being able to meet my band members and other crazy people from this amazing scene and all the festivals sort of dying down. But let's not get into this depressing topic. So generally I feel blessed that I'm in a country and a position where life goes on and I can get all the stuff that I wanted and more from the interwebs. And how are things over there in Germany, Niklas?
Well, I'm pretty content mostly. I mean, we don't always have to address the elephant in the room, like, yeah, that's good, but let's just say that it's going all right for us at the moment. And I'm pretty happy about the rain that has happened because, yeah, that's sort of a big breather for nature. It had gotten pretty dry here in Germany. I don't think it's like the driest month since like the start of recorded weather here. So that's, you know, pretty disconcerting. But yeah, isn't tonight the like sort of the evening of Beltan?
Yes, it is. And I think it's a very, very nice, it's a nice Sabbath. It's one, it might sound cheesy or weird, but it's one of my favorites. And it sort of immediately brings up a scene from the Mists of Avalon movie, where they're all dancing their pagan dances with all the fires when the light of spring is at its highest peak. And you talked about the elephant in the room, so I feel a bit self-conscious. We wanted to also release a very cool thing with Seed, and sadly that has been postponed, but only by a week. So we're actually aiming for the next full moon. So we're just going to enjoy Beltane as it is, without any sort of maybe self-made pressure for a release to the audience of sort of a great new song about fairies and trolls. I digress.
You really do. You really do digress.
Yeah, I'm very good at that.
I was actually getting at that. It's even, like, you know, with it being Beltane and everything, it's even sadder that you can't really go out there and meet people and celebrate, because it's a very much a festival of togetherness, so to speak, if you know what I mean.
Well, I know what you mean, yes. And I completely suggest that we all light fire to the neighborhood. No, I don't. I think it's very sad. It's a feast of light and on the other hand, I'm trying to give this a positive twist, because I'm sure the people that are listening to this podcast are looking for something else than a sort of downer. This is also where you're able to cherish the lights that you have in your light, which sounds super corny, but it also makes you relive the moments of Beltane in previous years, where you were able to do what you would now in an ideal world be doing. Niklas, you sort of made me speechless. Yeah, it sucks.
No, yeah. Yeah, but no, let's see the positive. I mean, we're just celebrating together now, the two of us. I have like a glass of whiskey. I know that you've also, you know, been having some spirited drink. So it's all good. It's the best way it can be right now.
Yeah.
And we're back this week to talk about fulfill our promise from last week. We're going to continue talking about playing live, because the last episode was a bit convoluted and we were only getting to the point really where you arrive at the gig, sort of. So this is the second part right now, where we talk about the whole rest of the thing. Maybe if we're feeling super talkative tonight, there might even be a third part. I mean, who can tell at this point?
Wow.
I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say when you were saying this, yeah, we're going to be talking about the rest. I was like, okay, yeah, if we can fit this in this episode, because to be honest, the episode of last week was a trim down of a 24-hour episode of Meet and Moonlight. We actually took out the best parts because we're just that talkative.
Yeah, it took me quite a while to edit, but I mean, yeah, I finally condensed it down, so I don't know how long this will go.
Yeah, I'm aiming for 48 hours because we're actually talking about being on stage and getting on stage, and that is sort of the epicenter of
the meat in the soup.
What?
The meat in the soup?
Oh, or am I just translating? I just thought you were saying mead in the soup, and I was like, why would you waste perfectly good mead? No, I was going to say this is the ultimate resonation of our profession as a pagan folk musician. The being on stage.
Here, here.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm ready to get into it.
Same.
All right. So let's just think about, we're just arriving at the venue or at the festival. Ideally, we've already had the situation where some helpful staff has led us to the stage, and now we're behind the stage. We have, you know, sometimes we only have a couple minutes or like half an hour, or sometimes we have a 5-hour window, but now we have to get ready. We have to set up the stage, we have to do the sound check, and we have to get into the right mood. So how do you start that?
It's an interesting thing that you're starting out with it's a huge hassle in the end. There you are, like, with all your this obviously doesn't go for every pagan folk band, because there's great electronic pagan folk bands out there as well. There you are with all your acoustic instruments. I know you have to be able to project those instruments to everyone that was great enough to show up to your gig and wanting to listen to you. And there is a lot of technicalities and cables and, well, things I don't know the name of because I'm just a flute player and not a technician. There's a lot of that involved. How do you start? Well, when I joined my band, and I was sort of preparing to play shows because the gods allowed it, I was like, I think I need a microphone. Let me head over to the nearest... This is a true story, by the way. Let me head over to the nearest music store. And I'm not naming the store because we don't get sponsored. I went over there with my brother and said, yes, hello, I play the flute and I need to be amplified. They're like, what's this? Okay, let's just give him a universal mic. So yes, okay, very happy with the universal mic. So I just had a mic, but apparently that's not all. That's not all that is needed. Because you need to plug that into something, and there needs to be something in between, and then it goes to a table, and then it goes to another table on stage. Niklas, it overwhelmed me at first. So, well, how do you start? If you assume that everybody has... Let's skip the basic stuff. I digressed again. You bring up your instruments with the microphones attached to them, or maybe you have a singing thing, and then all the signals need to be checked. Is there even a signal from your beautiful voice to the table, to the boxes? And this is sadly, because this is not necessarily a fun moment. This is a very suspenseful moment, because there is a time schedule that you adhere to bring the music in the end. And if this signal does not go through, there is an issue. There is not just a technical issue. There is what goes to my mind personally. There is going to be a time issue. And the music will suffer.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes it's so annoying because things have worked 1,000 times and then you just plug it in. And even though technically nothing has changed from the last time you set up, for some reason, it's just not working. I mean, we with Waldkauz, we usually bring a lot of our own onstage equipment. So we bring all of our own vocal and drum mics and everything, and also our own sort of stage box. So technically everything, so that everything is sort of the same, you know, every time, but at least from our side. But then sometimes it'll still happen that we do something and we'll just like, then suddenly there's no signal from the bouzouki or like the bass drum microphone isn't working, even though everything is as it usually is. And then the great panic starts and we're just fiddling around with cables, even though, to be fair, it's mostly our drummer doing that. He's like, we have our sound engineer, our technician, who we sort of always bring along because we have found that it's very useful to always, you know, bring your own front of house person. But Peter, our drummer, is sort of like the second in command as far as like technical stuff is concerned. And then he'll just rub around on stage trying to figure out where the broken cable is, while everyone else of us is just standing around like helplessly, like, what can we do to help? And then just, yeah, we never can really do anything. So it's a very stressful situation.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. And I think this could be a nice view into a pagan folk musician's life for the people listening that have not been in this situation. Is that, obviously, when you hear these stories, the magic and the spiritual energy that is eventually being put into the music is sort of paused at this moment, because like Niklas said, you will be running around on the stage hoping to help out with technicalities that are quite frankly out of your knowledge range. And the thing you are there for is bringing a ritual, a spiritual piece, a fairy tale, celebrating a Sabbath with great people. And it's just not possible at that moment. And yes, it is possible to say, screw the stage, let's just all climb down and play. That's all fine, great, glorious, and heroic stories. But then again, you will only be reaching tens of people while you're hoping to share an experience with hundreds or maybe even thousands of people. So, it's interesting. Yeah, it's scary.
And there are so many mundane things that you have to be aware of and that I had never taken into consideration before we sort of got into the whole thing. Like all the little parts that make up like a concert. We have like a case full of cables, and then they, you know, after a concert, they all need to be coiled again. So like, and, or we usually bring our own merch tent because it's not something that is always supplied. I mean, there's festivals like Castlefest where it luckily is, but then if that's not the case, then there's just another like very mundane, boring thing that you have to take care of. And it just adds up to like a lot of things that sort of don't really allow you to get into that moment very early on when you get to a festival. I mean, and then even during soundcheck, which, I don't know, soundcheck is so boring. Usually we're standing there and then 80% of the soundcheck is just the drummer hitting different parts of his drum set, and it always, I don't know, I can never really tell if it sounds different after they've done it. And then it's just, when it's your turn, you're waiting there, and then I put on all my effects pedals because I want to make some cool sounds, and then, but yeah, Niklas, that's all great, but we need the dry signal. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I just strum a chord 2 times and like, yep, that's fine, thank you. And then I just stand there again. And I don't know. Like, do you like sound checks?
It's interesting. like what you said in the end, I was smiling over here like, oh hell yeah, this is my moment. I have this solo stage and I'm just going to play awesome stuff. And people will be like, oh my god, who is that Bouzouki player over there? And then they just turn you off immediately. And I was like, yes, give me some sweet reverb. Let me come into your ear, pussies. Sorry. Yeah, so soundcheck is, when it's well on the way, it's actually one of my favorite moments. Is that weird? But it's only one of my favorite moments if you see there is this super loyal crew of fans that sacrifice like 45 minutes of their festival or evening to watch your soundcheck, just to be there. And then it sort of brings me back to where I did that with bands like Omnia and Faun. And I always loved the sound checks because you could see, I don't know, the stress or maybe the humanity before the show. Yeah, so I love it. If they turn on my mic during a sound check, I'm unstoppable.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, that's like a festival exclusive thing, though, I think. We have a lot of sound checks for like, I don't know, like true, regular club concerts or at like other events where it's not really possible.
We don't have cool shit like that, Niklas.
Well,
we don't.
Well, that's why we're like both that. Talking about this, Coon, so that we can tell the listeners about different experiences.
No, I'm envious.
Oh. So sometimes we will have a sound check while an event already is running, and then we don't really do a sound check. And we just have like a line check or like a silent sound check where we just check the sound for our in-ears, and our front of house guy is listening in through headphones. But then we don't really know how it sounds once the speakers of the stage are on. So that's always something that makes me super nervous. But yeah, sometimes it's unavoidable because when there's already an event running and there might even be like a second stage where a band is playing while you're setting up, you can't really like interrupt their set because you need to sound check. But yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, if it's like the way you described it, I guess then I'd also enjoy a sound check. But that's, I don't know. That only happens very rarely, unfortunately.
But that's another dimension that I completely can't relate with, because we haven't taken that step yet. You actually have the in-ears going on, where it sounds completely different. Do you feel like when you use that in-ear monitoring, because I've seen some bands starting to use using in-ear monitors where they sort of turn into their inward utopia of music, and they sort of it becomes, I don't know, this is just guessing, they lose some outward projection. Is this something you can relate to, or is it really great? Is it the perfect solution, or is it difficult?
Well, to me, I really like it. I know that there is musicians that don't really like it. For example, our bass player sometimes says he would prefer just to have like a normal like wedge in front of him that he could hear himself through. But I actually really enjoy it. I enjoy everything that takes away insecurities. So that's my, like, I don't have a cable on my Bouzouki. I have like a wireless system on my Bouzouki. I have in-ear monitoring, so I can just move wherever I want, and I don't have to worry about not hearing everything I need to hear or worrying about stepping over a cable. So then I'm even more focused on playing towards the audience, actually. And we have a thing where, when we don't forget it, we set up two atmosphere mics that are sort of pointed towards the audience, so you can get like sound of the audience and of ideally also of the speakers to some regard. Because I don't know if all people know that, but the sound you have on your in-ear is very different to the sound that is coming out through the speakers. It's mostly it's very dry. And you will have like different amounts of volume. Like, for example, I don't need the drum super loud on my ear or the bass, but through the speakers, it's probably more of an equal thing where I just need myself and like the, I don't know, like some of the melody instruments for the most part. Everything else is sort of down in the mix for me. But I actually enjoy it greatly.
Oh, wow. I think, yeah, it sort of hit me that I didn't realize that you guys were like, I don't know, maybe sounds weird, but much more technically advanced than how I've been climbing the stage. So it's actually interesting, interesting to hear this side of the story and the part of taking away as much insecurities as you can. That makes a lot of sense. That, yeah.
Oh no, go ahead.
I lost it.
Oh, damn it, sorry. No. I was just... now I lost mine also.
Whatcha? Oh, well. Okay, now, oh, no.
Wow, that's awful. So professional. No, I was just going to say that it's probably also a difference in loudness on stage, because with you guys, I mean, I don't think, which is a shame, honestly, I've not been on stage with you guys before, so I don't really know how loud it is on your stage, because you don't have like a full drum set, which is like very loud if you're standing on a stage. So if it's not that loud on stage, you can probably just do fine with just using normal monitors, like wedge monitors, and then it can probably feel more organic. But with us, it's when you don't wear headphones on stage and during concert, it's super loud because, well, drums are very loud, and usually the stages aren't that big that you can have like a huge distance between you and the drums. So I'm usually standing right in front of the drums, and if Peter starts sound checking and I'm not wearing my headphones, it's super loud.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah, we generally have like I always call it like the campfire setup, so it's not louder than that the people would have to take this. We obviously don't have the drum set with any crashes or huge bass drums. Did you always sorry, I digress, but I do it purposefully. I do it express. You have a drum set, and
yes,
you also have Peter sometimes rocking a portable ethnic drum.
That's true. He plays the djembe sometimes.
Yeah, which do you prefer? Do you sometimes feel like maybe a drum set is like, I don't know. Let me just put it super bluntly, so that people can just follow it. Like, break some sort of immersion there by it being that loud and not fitting for like a campfire setting?
I think it sort of developed to that when Nina and me joined the band. There wasn't a full drum set yet. It was like a mix mesh. I think he only had like a couple of like rack toms and then the djembe, a davul, and I think another African drum that's called the ashiko. One more, yeah. But I think our music sort of developed in a direction where I don't think we're really trying to recreate like a campfire setting or where we sort of feel like we need to or we want to like only rely on like, I'm doing like air quotes here, but like on like authentic, authentic pagan instruments. I think we sort of came to the conclusion that it's all about like creating a mood or an atmosphere, and we will use what we feel like using for creating that atmosphere. I mean, we recently, for the past 2 years, we've all also like been playing with an electric bass, which is also, I think, yeah, probably takes away from that campfire atmosphere. And it's not like it wasn't like an easy decision. Also with the drums, it was like a couple of years before Peter was allowed to or decided to use a snare drum, for example. Or now the most recent addition is like a hi-hat, where for a long time he wouldn't want one because he was afraid of using like falling into like rock rhythms too much. But I think now we have broadened our sound where we are free sort of to take up on, you know, different influences and to try to create our version of pagan folk in different ways, maybe.
Yeah. No, okay, cool. That's really, I sort of maybe just wanted to hear the side that I couldn't visit because we don't have it, and I think you described it perfectly how it wasn't criticism at all, by the way.
Oh no,
it's definitely like, how can you achieve this sort of same setting mood with different instruments? And there's great examples of electronic bands like Valravn or Found using those things on another next level, maybe, where they aren't even real instruments at the stage. But I think what you described, like you use the tool set to create the atmosphere, and I think it really fits well. And also it sort of amplifies the moments that he does sort of venture forth with his drum around his middle. That's a cool insight for me to have as well.
I just go ahead.
Well, I wanted to sort of bring you to the next topic, so I'm going to give you the chance before I do so.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about one other thing about setting up to maybe that you just made me think of with the drums and everything. So for a long time, we had this very elaborate drum setup of like different like of parts of a drum set, but then also more like ethnic drums or like acoustic drums. And then in the beginning, we had, now I'm sorry if it's not the correct word, but we had like two timpani. Do you know what that is?
You can bake something in there.
Well, I guess it also is an Italian dish, I think. No, but timpani are like these big orchestral drums.
Oh,
you know?
No,
wait.
No, I don't know.
Wait, I'm gonna go to shit.
You should definitely post this after the episode, because I think loads of people will have no clue what a timpani is.
Well, let me just look it up real quick. It's a timpano or like a kettle drum. Yes.
A kettle drum.
Yeah.
That sounds much more up my alley. I still have no clue what it looks like, though, I think.
Well, it doesn't matter. So, like, it's these big orchestral drums. They look like, well, they look like a kettle, and they're made out of, like, bronze or copper sometimes. And, yeah, so for a long time, we had two of those, which are very big in our setup, and they, because they didn't have any cases, so we would always need to sort of like wrap sheepskins around them and then very carefully put them at the top of everything we loaded into the caravan. And it was always very stressful, and you wouldn't really know if one of the skins might rip during the transport. Oh. And then they also, so they have a round bottom, so they can't stand, you know, by themselves. And we had these sort of like self-made wooden stands for them that were very, I don't know, they're very wonky. So sometimes it took like 5 minutes to put one of them up so that it would securely take the kettle drum. And so that's something that we put ourselves through for many years before we just decided, you know, we're only using them for two songs. We might as well leave them at home.
This sounds like a bloody logistical nightmare if I ever heard one.
Bloody logistical nightmare. That's the name of our band documentary.
Wow. Holy damn. I mean, okay, yeah. So they did sound great?
Well, yeah. I mean, they have like a very loud, booming sound. but they were also pretty single use.
Yeah, and that's the other funny thing, like where you say they have like a great booming voice, they have a great booming sound. And this is, I think, a nice bridge for another episode is, okay, so cool that this drum has this cool sound, but, I mean, you can just fake it, right? Everything can be electronic.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think there have been, there is some parts of our music where we have, for example, I think we play that song now again. It's a song off our first album. It's called Viento y Onda. And in the beginning, it has like the sound of waves. And very early when we played shows, we had this ocean drum. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a drum with small balls in it.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the song, our former guitar player would stand there and sort of like slowly shake it to make like the sound of roaring, of rolling waves. And now currently that's something where just our drummer just hits like something on his like drum pad thing that he has where all the samples are stored that we use, and it just goes, and then he hits it again and it turns off, which is way more convenient. And I think, I don't know, some, I think we in the beginning we struggled a lot with, you know, you going more into that route, you know. But it really helps to keep the show more, I don't know, it doesn't feel unorganic. It feels very natural. It doesn't you don't need to carry like a whole box of extra auxiliary percussion with you just to do like very little things that can only go wrong, or they can be, I don't know, just forget them in the box off the stage or just something like that.
No, it's a cool thing maybe to think about even more, is that the music, the atmosphere, the sort of authenticity, is it in the real instruments or is it more in the people that deliver the music on stage? It's actually, yeah, I think it's something that is seen a lot, and also seen like it's seen a lot right now with the technical advancements, but it's also been there for quite a while. And it's something that I sort of struggle with, and I'm sort of the easiest person in my band. It's definitely my brother that struggles with like implementing non-instrument for an instrument. It almost sounds like a sci-fi series from Netflix. Should the non-instrument be valued at the as the same? I don't know. It's interesting. I don't have an answer, and just sort of putting this up for discussion for myself or for later episodes. It's cool. Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. That can probably fill like a couple of episodes.
Yeah. And definitely some people that I would like to talk about that with.
Yeah. So, but I think earlier you wanted to delve into a different topic, right?
Yes. I want to talk about step 3.5. 3.5 is actually playing the show that you have traveled the lands for, that you have stayed in a tent or a crappy tent or a luxurious hotel for, the moment that you have set up all your technicalities for. It is the playing of the show. And just a slight pause before that. Is there, before you go into this epic, all-deciding moment that you can only deliver once that day, do you have sort of like a good luck ritual or a bonding ritual with your band?
Yeah, I think I might have mentioned, I definitely have mentioned it in the last episode where we sort of stand around and then we, in a circle, and we each have a sip of wine. usually white wine or some sort of fruity wine. And then we hold hands and we all take three deep breaths. And then, that's what we usually do. And yeah, it's really become, I think we do it every time. I don't think we forget it. How about you?
And I just had one more question about this. If new people join the band, how do they experience this? Because it's new to them to do like the moment and the.
I think then it's probably even like a bit more intense maybe, because I don't know, it's sort of what a ritual is supposed to do. Like, it sort of closes the circle of the people present and your sort of brothers and sisters with everyone, because you're sharing like a drink and you're sharing a breath and you have that physical contact. And I think I'm just trying to think back of the last concert we played, which was in early January, which was the first concert with our new members, Alana and Diana. And I think they really liked it, and it really helps, you know, to strengthen that bond.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of bands in this genre do those moments. I've seen the Heya Heya hug from Omnia. I've seen other sort of screaming rituals from bands in the backstage. So it is something that can be seen quite often. And it helps connect everyone it helps them face the moment that is coming, that they're actually going to do this together, and that it's not just playing some musical pieces. It's actually you're sort of entering an epic circle that you're sharing together, and you're hopefully, in the best case scenario, branching out to everyone standing, dancing, screaming, singing in front of you. Yes, that is what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah. And do you have a ritual that you do?
Do we have a ritual? Well, of course, I was going to make a very cool joke about us doing the thing that they do with Vikings when they go at raiding, but I couldn't find the words. So, first of all, we make sure that nobody has an anxiety attack, which is sort of half jokingly, because people have been going through some rough shit, and then at some point you're like, why am I actually doing this? This costs a lot of stress and stuff. But the ritual, yeah, we don't really have a fixed thing. We always make sure to gather up quite a while before the gig. So there's no like the external stuff that we talked about earlier, the setting up or logistical stuff. And we also make sure that the merch people don't have any stress, or we try to. Because we are also always there with like the band and the crew and we sort of want to start it in unison. They're a big part, which could also have a dedicated episode, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The crew. So, do we have a ritual? I couldn't tell you a fixed one. I could pretend that we have one, but I don't know. We gather up and we sort of feel each other in... We tell each other what we feel that is needed for the person at that time, I think.
That sounds very wholesome. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think... I can't create a more romantic ritual out of it.
I think, like, with our ritual, of course, you know, I don't think that something like that comes naturally. So we just decided to do it, and it might have felt, like, strange in the beginning. And sometimes... Like, for example, me, if I'm very stressed before a show, I'm like, oh, can we just like not do it? It's fine if we don't do it. But then I always feel better after we've then done it. I think it definitely helps, even though I'm sometimes hesitant. So maybe it's a typical case for fake it till you make it.
No, I think it's actually a very good badly disguised mindfulness exercise, which is very proven to work. So I think you have a golden thing going on there, and it's not very weird that a lot of bands in the genre have that, because they want to be present and in the now. So I think you actually have a very good thing going on there, and sometimes being in the present is something that you should force your human busy mind to do. So it's good.
Okay, Kuhn. So now we got to the stage. We set up. We did the sound check. We did the pre-show ritual, and we're about to start the show. What's going through your mind during the first song?
The next week's shopping list.
Yeah, same.
So thank you. This was episode 5. Now, okay. So what's going to be honest? The first one or two songs. Jesus, I fucked that up, didn't I? I completely ruined the mood. I'm just going to continue like I didn't. So I enter the stage, and the first song, I'm a nervous wreck, because you don't know who will be there, how it will go, what the technical amps and the technicalities are going to be like. And then the second song is also still sort of nerve-wracking until the first talk. If you have like a moment to sort of identify with the audience, like, hey guys, we are depending on which band, insert your band name in the and then you get like a rah back, and then it sort of starts rolling, then you've made the connection, then you've hooked your energy matrix to theirs, and then you start resonating. And as weird as it sounds, from that moment on, all my nerves are gone. Legit.
Oh, that's very convenient.
Do you have a different experience than Nicholas?
Well, usually we start out with a couple like of faster songs and play them back to back before we first talk to the audience, and it's usually songs that I feel very like confident about, and I know they're bangers, so to say. So
what is a bangus? Usually
bangers. So like for a long time now, the first song we play during a show is Mati Sia Assemblia, and it's a very powerful song. So we start with the bang, and you can throw yourself into the song, and ideally like you spark a fire in that moment, and so it's very, yeah, so actually for me the first couple songs are usually like a good feeling if there is a willing audience, you know, if you sort of play your heart out for the first two songs and they're just standing there, and then you're thinking like, ooh, that's gonna be a rough one. But I know, yeah, usually that doesn't happen, so that's good.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue that you can struggle with, and I think every band has been through that. And then it becomes difficult because you sort of put yourself out there, like you said, you lighted a fire, and the other people are really not trying to keep the fire lit. So at that moment, you sort of have to turn inwards towards your band and then create your own fire on stage, which is a completely different experience, which you didn't brace for. Is that something that you can relate to, that you have to sort of create your own party on stage because the audience is not very willing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think actually it's probably like the more healthy approach sometimes, that you are not playing for the audience, but you're rather playing together with your band members, and you're trying to have fun with them, because then sometimes that can help the whole thing to be more genuine if you are just enjoying playing to these people that you like and that you share this music with on stage. That can be very, very empowering, I find. And then, yeah, but I guess I get what you're saying, that, you know, if we are partying hard enough up here, maybe then it'll work. And it's definitely sometimes I catch myself when it's going really great, like for example at Castlefest, and there is a willing audience, then I'm just, the way that I move, I'm much more focused on playing to the front, like to the audience, rather than to the stage usually. And then sometimes I have to pull myself back and be like, oh shit, that I don't want to like be a fucking poser and just stand there all the time and like in front of the audience. I actually want to play with my bandmates also.
It's the same thing as last week, that a lot of emotions, memories keep flashing through my brains when I hear you talk about this stuff. And I think it's a cool thing that you named Castlefest. There's something about that, about playing there, and I don't want to discredit Castlefest, but it's not necessarily the name that the festival has, but it definitely is the people that are there. I don't know, I would like an anthropological study dedicated to everyone there, but I don't know, there's just something there. And there's some festivals that also have that thing, but there's still like this magical formula where even if you screw up, that sort of energy cycle and the whole question answer thing that your music and the audience become it just can't be broken, it can't be doused. And then Nicholas, I don't know if it is this festival in particular, but do you have any favorite live show memories to share, perhaps?
Oh, favorite. Okay, so well, yeah, I mean, obviously, there have been some great things that happen. I think, like, more recently, something that I really enjoyed was, I mean, it's going to be Castlefest again, because that was, I think, our biggest show, like, our biggest shows last year. But we were playing all 3 days, so, like, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And on Saturday, we had, like, a late afternoon slot at it's the Forest stage. That's the biggest one, right?
Yes.
Yes. So we had a gig at that stage. And on the evening before, we had it
Meadow?
The smaller stages. And I wanted to try...
The village. Yes,
yeah. And I wanted to try something. We have this one song. It's called Tanzgeist, and there is a part in that where the music sort of dies down a bit, and then I do like a little in between talk, and then the audience claps rhythmically. You know, like audience participation. That's what you do. And I thought, like, okay, I want to like get a bit like more involved with that. And then let's
see if this works.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds super self-involved, but I told them, like, no, get down on your knees, and when the beat comes back in, then you all jump up and you go crazy. And I thought, okay, I was thinking to myself, oh man, that can go so wrong if they just don't do it, and it's the most pathetic thing ever. But you know, with it being Castlefest, they did it, and it was such a, I don't know, it felt so cool to see all the people react to the music. And so we did that again on Saturday, but on the big stage, and I don't know, that was very, very overwhelming and so awesome to see, and yeah, just great. And I think that's probably one of my favorite memories from recent times. How about you?
First of all, that sounds super great. Let's not use the F word, because we also have children listening, maybe. My greatest memory. Well, I don't know why, but there's sort of an... Is it? Yes, I think there's like this moment where I was on stage and I nearly fainted, which doesn't sound fun at all. And I was like, okay, sorry, I'm going to have to leave the stage. The show is cancelled. But then I asked for a chair and I said, no, I'm going to try this. And we sort of finished the show, and sort of the, I felt like I was not delivering because I wasn't moving and doing the stuff I would normally do and I wanted to give the audience. But the audience just didn't care. They sort of, they were like a cradle of love. And weird artist friends climbed the stage to show their support. And sort of that, that whole moment and involvement with each other, with people that you don't necessarily know. Well, that was something special. So it wasn't a great feeling for me at first. It was actually very low. But then again, I was pulled out from that by the love of the audience. And that's quite cool.
Yeah, that sounds very lovely. I remember seeing pictures of that because we weren't at Castlefest that year. Yeah. So I remember seeing pictures and being like, I don't know, even just from, I think you posted about it on Facebook, and even just reading that, I was like, oh man, that sounds, I don't know, I wouldn't know what I would have done in your situation. I think you really braced it very, yeah, amazingly. And I think it's so cool to see all of, you know, that outpouring of love and support from both, you know, band members or other musicians and from the audience. That's so great.
Yeah. And then there's another thing that we, like I said, there can be a whole episode dedicated to crew, is that at festivals that like have the luxury of having crew members, like stage managers, dedicated stage managers that really know what they are doing, are huge support to bands as well. And at that moment, one of the greatest stage managers was Dolph, and he just stood there in the shadows of the stage, like Tenacious D says it, and he just sort of nodded to me, dude, it's okay, whatever happens. And that sort of just, it was all good. And I think that's in this episode, it's and the previous episode, I think we've drawn quite a good sketch of what's involved in getting a sort of showing a worryless or good show on an spiritual and emotional level. There's so many aspects involved that people would not necessarily think about, and that I definitely didn't think about when we started this whole journey.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So, Kuhn, looking at the clock, we're already getting pretty close to the 1 hour mark again. And I think it might be a good idea to do a third part of this playing live. It's a series now. How do you feel about that?
It is. Well, I think there's definitely some credit to be had by some essential components of the live show that we have left out. So I could get into that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing as well is, if people are like, "Ooh, is it too risky to maybe ask audience members to tell what makes their clock tick?" I don't know. If people hear this and hear my doubt, and are very brutally honest, brutal. What's brutal in English?
Brutal. Brutally honest.
Upfront.
Upfront. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, I have something to tell. Perhaps, maybe, we can sort of implement that, because we've been talking a lot about the involvement of the audience.
Oh yeah, so
it would be cool to have the audience. Yeah.
So for that, I would probably do it in a way that if you have something to say in that regard, maybe it would probably just be enough to like record a short statement that you can then send to us. I think that's probably way easier done than to get on the podcast, but rather just a short, I don't know, like 30 seconds to 1 minute clip of what of what Kuhn has basically described, and then just send it to us. We'll put a I don't know, like an email address or something up where you can send it, and then we can sort of like slice it in the episode. How about that?
I completely threw you under the bus with this, didn't I?
I mean, we got to do it at some point, and I was just thinking that that could be a cool like solution or like a cool way to do it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. Well, I would love it, and I think credit should be where credit's due. And it's definitely the audience. And I would love to spend next week talking about crew backstage, people hiding in the shadows of the stage. Yes, like you said, we're getting close to an hour. I would also maybe like to address the after festival blues that many people experience. So yeah, I think there's still plenty to talk about in a third episode of the series.
Absolutely. So, but we won't just stop talking because we still gotta get out our weekly recommendation.
Hell yes! We're so steady.
Yes.
We're so scheduled. Wow.
Nice.
We're so professional.
So I'm just gonna... Yeah, so everyone, so for those of you who are just turning in now, we have this thing where we have a playlist on Spotify where each week in an episode we add two new songs per person that either we just like or that have something to do with the topic of the episode. And yeah, it's an ongoing thing, just like this podcast, so check it out. It's you can just find it under Mead and Moonlight, the playlist. Very creative name, but that's what it's called. So you should follow that playlist and get our weekly updates. Kuhn, do you want to start with your first pick?
Yes. My recommendation is a newcomer for me and my listening repertoire. It was a band that I saw for the first time live in August 2019, the year of non-COVID at Castlefest, and it was a band called Vael. And I think I pronounced it pretty well, because first I said Vael, and I heard them say Vael. And it's spelled V-A-E-L, but check our playlist. And they are from Spain, and I have one song that really stood out to me, and that is... Oh, I actually checked this with the Google Translate thing to sort of pronounce it right, but I forgot it because I did it at the start of this episode. This song is called Cerne Chari, and it's on their own personal YouTube as well as our playlist, and... This young Spanish pagan folk band just blew me away with the instruments they used, their enthusiasm, the fact that they were bloody nervous, which was super charming to see. And I sort of recognized a lot of myself and friends of mine that play in bands like this, on festivals like this, so it just fit, and they're very nice people as well, which is always very important to me when you're playing this genre, because if you're not a nice person and you're playing, it just doesn't fit. And they are so nice. So if you don't know them yet, check them out. Vael.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. A shout out to Teresa, who plays hurdy-gurdy with them. She has the best music taste, because it's very similar to mine. Well, anyway, so that was your first pick. Here goes my first pick. It's I'm gonna go full German on you. So it's a German folk band. They're called Bube Dame König, and I'm gonna choose their song "Wenn alle Brünnlein fließen," which is so basically their whole thing is that they're doing like renditions of traditional German folk songs, which. Like in Germany, the folk song has been for a long time has been sort of tarnished by very kitschy like Schlager renditions of that material, or by the Nazis, to be honest. But they're doing a very good job in like bringing some of the most beautiful songs Back to Life and Wenn alle Brünnlein fließen is a personal favorite of mine. I sing along every time, even though it's a bit too high, at least their version. Yeah, so go check it out.
Das ist ein ganz tolles Band.
Yeah, nicht wahr?
Okay, sorry, I just wanted to do the whole German thing right back at you. And I'm very bad at it. So my second recommendation is a very small band from Italy. No, it's not a very small band from Italy. It's a band that has derived their name from Latin, which is, you could say it's sort of Italian. They seem very cultural with their name, and there is people disliking them. There's people liking them, there's people loving them, there's people that have followed them from the start, but they are definitely a root for this genre. And this band is called Everything Omnia, and yes, so I had to put it in there. It's just, I realized that people would be like, oh my god, but Steve posted this, geez, you can't seriously be still supportive of them. It doesn't really matter if this is one of the root causes that I took the path that I am now walking. And everybody has their own path of life. So, let's keep this political free. I would like to recommend the song The Well, which is great.
Yeah, pretty classic song. Okay, so for my second pick, I'm gonna go again, like a little bit like last week, with a band that I'd love to see perform live. They're, again, a Scandinavian band. I'm not sure if they're from Sweden or from Norway, and I'm also not 100% sure how their name is pronounced. I'm gonna go with Gotte, maybe. It's like the English gate, but then there's a circle above the A, so it's, you know, you can figure that out yourself or just look into the playlist. And yeah, they've been active in the early 2000s mostly, and then they were on a bit on a hiatus, but they've been back for some time now. And I'm gonna choose a song of their 2018 album, and the song is called Bannlust, and it's very, it's a bit more rockish, but it has a lot of like very cool energetic folk violin, and the singer also sounds like she could sing in Germana or in Valraun or any of those bands. So yeah, and I've seen some live videos on them of them, and they put on a pretty cool show, so definitely check them out. And yeah, with that, we are once more at the end of this episode. Yeah, Kuhn said it in the beginning, I think. Thank you again for all your nice feedback we're getting. I'm very happy when we get like Instagram stories where people tag us in, and where they're just sitting outside listening to the episode, drinking some mead in the moonlight, as it is supposed to be. But you know, you can listen to the episode whenever you want. So keep that coming. We're very grateful for not just shouting into the void, even though this episode also has two listeners that are listening in live, so that's all also a good feeling, actually. Yeah, anything you want to add?
Let's hope they don't encourage them and they start shouting right now. So please don't, people. I think we sort of went over the value of the audience in this episode for people being on stage. And like Niklas said, this also goes for people recording a podcast and releasing that into the big wild web of the internets. So yes, thank you so much for your support and your personalized shares, tags, whatever. That helps a lot, gives us a lot of energy to put into the next episode. Yeah, we hope you're all safe. We hope you can stay strong. We hope you can have the patience to act accordingly to the situation. So thank you so very much for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of Mead and Moonlight, The Pagan Folk Podcast.
Hell yeah.